Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results than last time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. How you doing, man?
I am doing great. Had lunch, good lunch from downstairs. I'll tell you, that has been much improvement.
Oh, yeah.
It's a new world.
We got to give a shout out to the Salt Block. Isn't that the name of that outfit?
Salt and Block.
Salt Block, Salt and Block. I don't know. Down in the lobby at 1 Glen Lake Parkway. This is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with a guy who we have had a conversation with at a remote broadcast when we were launching Business Writers Radio. And so that was a lot of fun. We finally got him in the studio. So in a little while, we're going to visit with Chris Bush, millennial happiness expert. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome to the broadcast Executive Director with Aerotropolis Atlanta Community Improvement Districts. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Gerald McDowell. How are you, buddy?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Now, Gerald, can you share a little bit about what you guys are up to? What is Aerotropolis Atlanta doing?
Aerotropolis Atlanta is bringing focus to the immediate area around the Hartsfield-Jackson Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at opportunities to revitalize that area around the airport.
Now, how are you defining kind of the perimeter of that area? Like, what is that area? Like, what parts of town? What does that include?
It includes parts of Clayton County as well as Fulton County.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of cities that our Community Improvement District covers, Hapeville, College Park, East Point, and the city of Atlanta.
Now, is this, are you building an actual building? Is this a location, or is this kind of just all of those areas and the businesses within it?
Our main focus is infrastructure. So community improvement districts, we focus on infrastructure, which are roads and bridges, sidewalks, and then we also focus on public safety as well as beautification. So we focus on those things that are necessary for an area to be revitalized and for development to take place.
Now, how do you begin such a venture? Do you start at the airport and go, okay, the airport is this great asset. It's like one of the jewels of the city, if not the southeast or the country. Do you build out from there, or how do you include all the, you know, constituents?
Well, actually, it goes back before the airport. Community Improvement District is a concept that has been in Georgia or the Metro Atlanta area now for going on 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, we're sitting in a Community Improvement District called the Perimeter Community Improvement Districts. And so that concept has been in the Metro Atlanta area for going on 30 years, and it has successfully spurred new development and redevelopment throughout Metro Atlanta. And so the property owners and business owners around the airport wanted to use that tool to help spur new development and redevelopment around the airport as well.
So is it also one of these kinds of things that might attract businesses that may have a good presence, say, in Perimeter or out in East Cobb or something? Are some of your efforts aimed at possibly attracting businesses that are doing well there to also have a presence?
Absolutely. What it does is we address the challenges for why businesses and projects may not be taking place in South Metro as it stands today. And then as we address those challenges, which usually falls in one of those three categories, improving the flow of traffic,
mm-hmm.
Making sure that the area is safe, and making sure that the area is appealing. And those are some of the challenges that we're facing as a community improvement district.
Now, do you reach out to the business owners? Because they're the ones that get the greatest benefit from your efforts, right?
Yes, we do reach out to the business owners. And that allows me to tell you that there is a second organization using the Aerotropolis Atlanta as a name. And that's the Aerotropolis Atlanta Alliance. Because community improvement districts, we represent property owners.
Mm-hmm.
But more specifically, we represent commercial property owners, industrial property owners, as well as those who own office buildings. And so in order to have a good partnership with the businesses, we needed a sister organization, and that's where the Alliance comes in. The Alliance brings to the table not only the jurisdictions in the area, Fulton and Clayton County and 10 different cities, but it also brings to the table the various businesses.
Because they could just be leasing space
absolutely
within those buildings that you serve,
correct.
Right?
That's correct. And so in order to improve the area and to address those challenges, you have to know what the challenges are for businesses, why they are not necessarily locating their business in the South Metro. And so we may improve the roads and we may address safety, but if you don't find out what the needs are for the businesses in the area, then we may miss the boat. And so so the two organizations, we use the same name because we want to create a new brand in Metro Atlanta. We all are familiar with the brand of Perimeter and Cumberland,
right.
Midtown and Buckhead. Well, we want the world, when they come to Atlanta for the Super Bowl, we want them to come to the Aerotropolis and find out what's going on in that
right,
area.
Right, so that you want that to be kind of a part of town just like Buckhead is.
Absolutely.
Right? So
yes.
Aerotropolis, that people know in their head that that's in and around the airport.
That's correct. So the two organizations are working together to identify those projects and initiatives that are necessary that to attract people, to bring people to the area and to who want to live in the area, work in the area, as well as entertain in the area.
So what exactly is the mechanism for identifying challenges, identifying motivations? Is it town hall meetings? Is it face-to-face conversations? How are you capturing this intelligence?
There are several groups and organizations that we work with on a daily basis. And at the federal level, we work with the U.S. Department of Transportation. At the state level, we work with Georgia Department of Transportation. We work with the Atlanta Regional Commission. Those types of organizations. We also work with chambers of commerce. And then more specifically, we work with counties and we work with cities. And so each one of those levels or organizations, they have resources available to businesses and to the areas. And so we find out what challenges that they are confronting, what their long-range plans are, as well as their short-range plans are, and we try to fill in the gaps to make sure that if there's a desire for a specific project or a specific activity, but there may not be immediate funding available, or there just may not be the intelligence gathering that is done on the front end because no one has taken that ball to run with it, that's where a community improvement district can step in and kind of fill that gap once we work with those different parties and find out what their long-range plans are.
Can you share a little bit about how you work with the different chambers of commerce?
Absolutely. The chambers of commerce, as you would know, bring together all the businesses in the area. Mm-hmm. When they bring together, those businesses have challenges. They have needs. For example, if we want to attract new industries to the airport area, workforce development is one of the biggest needs in the area. There are companies who would locate in South Metro, but the workforce is not there for those jobs. So we work with the businesses and find out what training is needed, and then we partner with educational institutions, the K-12 schools, to make sure that the workforce is in place for these jobs that are desired and these jobs that may come down the pipe.
Now, I don't know if people really appreciate the Aerotropolis area has some of the finest attractions and amenities in the city that maybe that they're not connecting with that area, right?
That's absolutely right. A lot of people don't know that in this Aerotropolis area, we have the Georgia International Convention Center. It's a convention center that can house sporting events as well as other conventions.
Like trade shows,
right,
conferences.
And
it's like just minutes away from the airport.
It's in walking distance away
right,
from the
really?
Airport. As a matter of fact, the train that brings you out of the airport
it goes through that
to the car rental
right.
facility stops at the Georgia National
wow.
Convention Center.
All right, but I thought maybe it was an easy train ride, but you're telling me it's walking distance?
It is in walking distance, yes.
Wow. I did not,
right.
I mean, that's a perfect example. I had no idea. I've been living here for, almost 30 years now.
You can come out of the Georgia International Convention Center, walk across a bridge, and be inside of the airport terminal in less than 5 minutes.
Wow.
And there's things like the new Porsche experiences. That's considered in that.
That's part right? of our Aerotropolis area. So in addition to the Porsche experience, where you can go and have a NASCAR driver take you around a track, you also have the Delta Museum.
Right, the Flight Museum.
The Flight Museum is there, and most people don't know how incredible that facility
is. That has, I think, simulators, right? There's
Absolutely.
All kinds of things.
It has all kinds of things. But there's also the headquarters for Chick-fil-A. And Chick-fil-A has what they call a backstage tour, where currently they have over 50,000 people annually touring that campus. But that's another amenity that's right here in Atlanta in our back door that's around the airport.
Mm-hmm. But there are so many resources in this soup, is my metaphor. But and so that's why it's so critical that we have an organization like yours and like this alliance, because sometimes these different disparate entities may not know how it all fits together and may not even be aware that this is resources over here and this resource is over there. I mean, you must be an incredibly organized person who's really good at connecting dots and connecting people and organizations.
Well, it certainly takes a team. I know we're all excited about the Falcons going to the Super Bowl, and a quarterback needs a receiver to throw to, and then some running backs to take the ball and take it in for a touchdown. So it's a team effort. And between the CID, the Community Improvement Districts, and the Alliance, we have brought together a team spirit among the cities and the counties that surround the airport and Hartsfield-Jackson as well. Hartsfield-Jackson is at the table and participating in this focus. And the thing that is most important to point out is that when we think about Hartsfield-Jackson, we think of the airport as it was maybe 25 years ago.
Right.
And there has been a lot of new technology to come out, and consequently now you can consider the airport area as a place to live and not have to worry about the level of noise that may have been true 25 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And then you can also have entertainment, and you can have other amenities that can be located around the airport that perhaps 25 years ago that wasn't true. And so what we have to do is, what we've done is, we have to rebrand the area and be able to show the greater community and the market in general that this is a place where we can have success. And one quick example, at the Georgia International Convention Center, it was just recently announced that the Atlanta Hawks has acquired a D-League basketball team.
Oh, really?
And they will be playing out of the Georgia International Convention Center. And because the Hawks organization recognized what that community offers to Metro Atlanta, and you can have the same experience in South Metro as you can in North Metro. We just have to make people aware of that.
Well, I think we can all agree that the ideal foundation for any community improvement effort is a good coffee shop.
Absolutely.
Right? So that's one of the things you got to get in place, and you get espresso at the airport. But if we haven't already, Gerald, I'm going to work with you, buddy, to get
fantastic.
A good coffee
get a good
shop
coffee shop. I would certainly be mindful of that. Yes, indeed.
So now, as part of your efforts to attract businesses from outside of Atlanta to the area, or is it to serve mainly the people that are already here in Atlanta that may want to relocate to the area?
Well, it's a combination. When businesses and developers and investors, when they're looking at Georgia, when they're looking at Metro Atlanta, we want them to know that they can consider the airport area.
Right.
But also, there are businesses that are already here. Let me give you a specific example. Take the film and TV industry.
Right, which is blowing up, right?
It's exploding in Georgia. They have sets all around Georgia and throughout Atlanta. But they also have post-production
right.
work that is necessary to do. And a lot of that work is now leaving Georgia and going back to California. Well, what we can house that work in office buildings and other facilities around the airport. You can have a headquarters, like, say, for example, the Mercedes-Benz headquarters, where they might want to have a satellite office so that they can fly executives and training those who are coming in for training, and they would not have to drive through the Metro Atlanta traffic. They could have a satellite office located around the airport. All of that is now feasible.
Well, that's very attractive. And are there like economic incentives that you at least entertain or maybe think through or talk through with the city, the county governments? I guess in my mind, I've always envisioned economic development efforts as sometimes offering, just to help people kind of help organizations get the thing off the ground. Hey, we're going to give you a little bit of break on taxes for a few years, or we're going to find the perfect piece of land for you, and we're going to build a school close by that'll train people to do your stuff. I mean, These are some of the things that you're thinking through and talking through every day, right?
Absolutely. The counties and the cities, they all have incentive packages. But there's one package in particular I want to mention. The state of Georgia introduced a program called Opportunity Zones a number of years ago. And this is where you designate a particular area as an opportunity zone, and any business that create jobs in that within that opportunity zone will receive state tax credit for each job that is created, $3,500 annually for the next 5 years. Well, you have opportunity zones throughout Metro Atlanta, but what people need to know is that those opportunity zones may be a 5 mile radius, for example, but the entire county of Clayton County is pretty much an opportunity zone. So if you come to Clayton County and you create two jobs or more, each one of those jobs would receive a $3,500 tax credit for the first 5 years. That is huge when you're talking about bringing jobs to Metro Atlanta, where you don't have to focus on one particular area. You can locate anywhere in the county. And Clayton County, out of 159 counties in Georgia, that makes it one of the most attractive counties in Georgia to locate new jobs.
Right, and people may not realize that Clayton County is right there.
It's in the middle of the... is Hartsfield-Jackson Airport.
You know? But they, in their head, they think that's Fulton County.
Absolutely.
You know, that's a lot of true. That is just to make them aware that it's that close.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
So now, where do you spend most of your time? Is talking to businesses? Are you talking to people out of state? Or are you talking to the government?
It's a combination of all of the above. I have regular meetings with elected officials, with the mayors and the city councils in the cities, with the county chairman and the board of commissioners. But I also, as recently as November, I attend Aerotropolis conferences. I was in Beijing back in November for about 10 days. And as a result of that trip, there are three developers that I had conversations with who are going to be coming to the Aerotropolis to explore opportunities. And coming up in April, I've been invited to be a guest speaker at the Aerotropolis Asia Conference, which is going to be in Singapore. And that's going to give me another platform and opportunity to tell them about the Aerotropolis Atlanta.
Right, because these companies are coming through Atlanta anyway. They might as well meet with you for a little bit, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. And it always helps to be able to use as a tool the world's most traveled airport.
Exactly.
Hartsfield,
you can just is that where your office is? You just park right there.
We're about 10 minutes away.
I sense that Gerald's probably a little too modest to mention this, but just to be clear, this is not his first rodeo. You've done this or something very similar.
That's correct.
In an area that we know has taken off. In fact, we have a very successful studio out there in this area. You've done this kind of thing in Gwinnett, have you not?
I sure did. I started with community improvement districts back in 2005 with the Gwinnett Village Community Improvement District there in Norcross. And then I left there and went over to the city of Lilburn for the Lilburn Community Improvement District. So I spent a total of 10 years working with community improvement districts in Gwinnett County and had an opportunity to learn from some of the top officials in the economic development and redevelopment and new development.
So you got to see it in action, and now you're taking all that, and then you're going to help grow this Aerotropolis area.
It was a perfect preparation to move into working on the Aerotropolis Atlanta that surrounds the world's most traveled airport. And I have to tell you, you learn to appreciate Hartsfield-Jackson a lot more when you go there every day and work, and you realize...
You see it in action every day,
you
right?
You see it in action every day, and you realize that the world literally comes through Atlanta.
Now, what do you need more of? How can we help?
We just need to put the word out about Aerotropolis Atlanta and let people know that the same thing, the same experience that they have in Buckhead and Midtown and on the Beltline, those same initiatives are underway in the Aerotropolis. As a matter of fact, we've had recent meetings with MARTA and looking at how to expand MARTA in South Metro. So in the coming months, in 2017, we're going to be conducting a feasibility study, a feasibility transit study, to see how where and how we can expand transit in South Metro. So we just need people to tune in to our website. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind me giving
sure,
an
absolutely.
Announcement, it's aerocids.com. So that's AEROCIDS CIDS.com. You can go to that website, and there's a place where you can put, enter your name, your first and last name, and your email address. And we send out electronic newsletters frequently, and you can get updates from us from time to time.
And then you work closely with the Chambers of Commerce in and around all those areas, right? The county ones, the city ones. There's a variety of, the, of Chambers of Commerce, I would imagine, that
well,
fit into.
There are four that we work with. In addition to the Metro Atlanta Chamber, we also work with the South Fulton Chamber, the Clayton County Chamber, and there's one called the Airport Area Chamber of Commerce. So there are four chambers.
I did not know that either.
That we work with. The Airport Area Chamber, there are a lot of businesses that interact with Hartsfield-Jackson, and they have their own Chamber of Commerce. And so there are four chambers that we actually work with.
Right. That's what people don't realize. There's more than one Chamber of Commerce.
That's correct.
All right. I'm excited, and I do. I'm serious about this. We're committed to economic growth, economic development, and we'll certainly make every effort we can, in general terms, to get you, the word out about what you're doing in our travels and as a broadcast medium. But I think beyond that, Lee, and we need to put some thinking into this. There's got to be a way to specifically communicate this to the distinct constituencies that we serve, the fintech area, the healthcare area, the small business folks. And so I don't have that answer yet, but we're going to find a way to do that.
Right. It might be a good idea to explore a series, maybe even if we just started with the low-hanging fruit of transportation or supply chain, which I'm sure that those are logical places to be located near the airport, right?
That's correct,
and to get more of those in there, you wouldn't be opposed to.
Not at all.
Well, and I'm interested in becoming a student of the McDowell economic development methodology.
That's right.
Obviously, he's cracked the code on this thing.
It's the third one, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, please keep up the good work.
Thank you.
It's invigorating. It's inspiring that you and your team are doing this work. This is important work. This has impact so far beyond what I think it might look like at first blush. And we wish you all the success in the world. Want to help any way we can.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, and thank you for that.
Yes, sir. Well, we're going to have you back, and we're going to think through this thing and see if there's a way for us to partner with you guys. But in the meantime, how about hanging with us while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, I would be glad to. Thank you for the invitation.
All right. Mate. Lee, you ready for the headliner?
All right. Let's see what this guy...
We're done with the undercard. We got Gerald out of the way. Now, this is going to be a good segment. Please join me in welcoming to the Business Radio X microphone, millennial happiness expert, Mr. Chris Bush. How are you, man?
I'm fantastic, Stone. Thank you for having me.
Oh, man, I love that voice. You're going to stay after for some voiceover work?
Yeah, I think some of your listeners might recognize me as the voice of Dora the Explorer.
I just couldn't quite nail it. Before we dive into a conversation about you and your work, I'm interested in your take on that last segment. There was a lot of new information in that conversation for me. Was there for you? What was your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I travel a lot of international, I do a lot of international travel, and I didn't really know that there was so much cool stuff going on around the airport. Because as soon as I land, it's kind of, how do I get out of the airport?
To where you're going, right.
As soon as possible.
Now you can linger a little bit.
I can linger a bit. And the other thing is I have a lot of buddies from other countries that will come in and out of the airport, and they'll say, well, I want to get the Atlanta experience. Can you come pick me up? I've got a 4-hour layover. And a lot of that is involved in me picking them up and then
going somewhere else. Right. That's your 4 hours right there.
Yeah. Exactly right. Like, I know this coffee shop in Buckhead is right. 40 minutes away.
But yeah, you should check out the Delta Flight Museum's right there.
Yeah.
It's worth the trip, and it's right there.
And thanks to Gerald, I can say, let me show you Aerotropolis. It just sounds so cool.
So share a little bit about your work. How are you helping folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Stone introduced me, I'm a millennial happiness expert. So what does that mean? That means that I specialize in maximizing the millennial generation through positive psychology and science. Productivity rolls into that. I myself struggled with happiness right out of college. The genesis of me writing my first book was I was objectively winning the American dream, as I like to say. I was cool car, great job, great friends, tall apartment, and the skyscraper, objectively doing really well. So it was to my surprise that just before my 24th birthday, I was diagnosed with acute clinical depression.
Because those are the symptoms.
Those are
right?
the symptoms, right? Right. Yeah.
High rise apartment, car.
It all starts with the Lexus.
Right.
So I thought, well, clearly nothing happened. I wasn't mm-hmm. broke. I had suffered a loss in the family. So I thought, how did this thing sneak up on me? Why do I feel so numb all the time? Well, the challenge mounted after that, because I went through what I call the mental health funnel, where I talked to therapists, psychotherapists, but eventually ended up in front of a psychiatrist. And I'll never forget the day that my psychiatrist cut me off mid-sentence to give me 5 milligrams of Wellbutrin. And I thought, well, I think this kind of feels like anesthesiology, but I feel like I need surgery, right? The surgeon is going to show up after the anesthesiologist. Well, no surgeon shows up for happiness. So I thought, I need to be the surgeon of my own happiness. I want to see if I can repair myself, right?
So you didn't agree with the Medicaid process?
I could get deeply into why it didn't really work for me.
Because a lot of people in that generation, that's a go-to move, right?
Yeah. It offers a temporary numbness from the feeling of depression, but it's not a cure-all. The cure is in building back up your happiness. So I started researching happiness to find out how I could repair myself. And I came across a study that the Germans, my people, published in 2008.
Because they are the happiest people.
The happiest, yeah. We are the funniest people in the world. It tells the best jokes and has the best science. And it's the best soccer. So they found, by watching 60,000 people in Berlin for 25 years, since before the fall of the wall, that we can credibly build our happiness over time, like a muscle. I thought, that's really cool. Maybe I can use that. So the question became, how do you do it? What is the CrossFit of happiness? What are the exercises? So that started a 9-month-long research project for me. I decided.
So you paused your whole life? You were doing it while you were working?
I started while I was working and found that the stuff I was researching that I was finding was working so well. It was faster than going to the gym to build muscle. I felt like building happiness was going even mm-hmm. faster. So I started sharing with my friends, hey, I was really depressed for a while, but then I found this awesome stuff and I kind of fixed myself. And to me, it felt like I was admitting to a glaring lack of elementary knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to change a tire, but I found out really quickly. So it's not as embarrassing, right?
So what were like the baby steps? What was like the first thing where you're like, hey, this might work?
Yeah, I watched a TED Talk.
Three Stooges?
Yeah. I watched a TED Talk by Robert Waldinger, who's a Harvard researcher. And he said that at Harvard, we've actually been studying happiness for 75 years. We want to find a formula for happiness by following 600 guys who are Harvard grads and then another few hundred from random areas of Boston. And they said, there's no formula. The number one currency of happiness that we found is your relationships. So maybe focus less on making money and try to build your relationships instead. See how that works. I thought, okay, I'll do that.
So relationship being like a intimate relationship or friend relationship?
Yeah, any interpersonal connection. Yeah. I think with my generation especially, I have 1,234 Facebook friends. I care about 50 of them. And I think there's been a dilution of the meaning of friendship in my generation especially. Mm-hmm. And when you get off the digital media and you focus on building, making eye contact and building a relationship with somebody, that's where the happiness is. And it's just another tiny little pitfall that my generation has fallen into that's been slowly siphoning our happiness over time. So what happened over time as I was researching this positive psychology was I began to reverse engineer how I fell into depression. I thought, wow, I had so much going for me and I still fell into it. What I want to do now is create a safety net. I want to train people my age to understand exactly where unhappiness comes from and show them how they can build happiness. I want to train them in the CrossFit of happiness so they can begin to reframe their lives on the things that are going to make them happier, more successful, more productive. And it just so happened that the most productive format I found to get the message out was in the book form. Millennials, contrary to popular belief, are actually pretty voracious readers, especially within the self-help genre. We're the one generation you're most likely to find in a library. That shocked me. Yeah. Gerald's face, you can't see. It's just, he's got two millennials at home.
So now he's got to add a library to the CID, right?
Yeah, right. There you go.
Right. Yeah.
Coffee shop.
More libraries.
Yeah. I have it.
Yeah. So I wanted to write a book for millennials to read that would help them understand the past 40 years of positive psychology so they could take action. I call it educated happiness. So, you know, we learned so much about life, liberty, why not happiness? And that's what the book is all about. It is that CrossFit of happiness. And I wanted to take it a further step because the number one demographic that reacted most positively to my message and to my book was the baby boomers.
The parents of millennials.
The teachers, the parents, the managers especially. Right. I had the chief HR
officer.
Did
that surprise you? Or was that an unintended consequence?
A little bit it did, yeah. I wrote it, of course, for millennials. It's kind of a...
You thought you did.
I thought I did, yeah. And then over time, it became clear that the book has a double value proposition. Because for millennials, it'll train them how to be happy. For boomers, it's the same science. It'll train them how to be happy. And it'll train them why millennials think differently. So I think of it as kind of the key to the millennial generation. The whole first chapter is a history lesson about how millennials grew to think the way we did. And a lot of it centers around the financial recession and the death of the American dream and what I call the happiness wasteland, where millennials are figuratively living in a Mad Max style post-apocalyptic wasteland of happiness, where after the financial recession, the baby boomers showed us that wealth isn't really as stable as we thought. It isn't quite the way to happiness as we thought it was. So the question for my generation became, what is? And I answer that question.
So your premise is that millennials grew up for a portion of the time in a safe, secure environment where the stock market was going up. It seemed like it was easy and we got this figured out.
Exactly.
Then the financial crisis occurred and it created a lot of turbulence and a little chaos, maybe more chaos than you'd experienced in your entire life. And then that kind of threw you for a loop. And then because of that, you think that was the trigger for a lot of the depression?
Absolutely. I think that's a part of it. I think it was a death by a thousand cuts is how it creates a lot of depression in my generation. The chasing of wealth, the kind of blind chasing of wealth is a part of it. The social media addiction is a huge part of it. Social media releases the same chemicals as alcohol as gambling. Simon Sinek does a great talk on this. And we have age restrictions on alcohol, on gambling. We don't on social media.
13.
Right. Yeah, 13. And, it's the same thing. It's effectively a dopamine release trigger that we can check at all times. Mm-hmm. So a big part of the book is helping folks, regardless of the amount of free time you have, it's about helping you understand exactly where that true happiness comes from, that kind of difference between what a pleasure is and what true happiness is. And a big challenge for me was weaning off of those pleasures, those temporary dopamine highs, because internalizing that they're all temporary and they're expensive, and focusing again back on the relationships, the things that are free, but are going to have a much greater impact on your happiness muscle.
So how do you kind of educate a millennial to move from, hey, how come no one's liking my Instagram post, you know, at the speed I would like, to, hey, maybe we should volunteer at the soup kitchen and that'll be more meaningful and that'll be a more worthwhile endeavor and that will truly bring me happiness?
Yeah, there's a phenomenon in psychology called the hedonic treadmill. The idea that if we're constantly chasing this artificial happiness through popularity, through physical wealth, through nice cars, you're on this treadmill. And happiness will always be an arm's length away. And the way to figuratively get off the treadmill is to focus on the things that really make us happy. So as an example of this, there's this Australian woman named Essena O'Neill, and she was an Instagram queen. This is a woman who effectively won social media. She had 100,000 followers, and she said, well, that wasn't satisfying. I want 200,000, 300,000, 400,000. Again, that treadmill effect. She needed more and more and more to feel the same feeling of satisfaction. It was always temporary. And she said when she finally got off of that idea of having X amount of Instagram followers and living her life around those temporary highs, and she instead just went to the park and gave people hugs, that was where her true happiness come from. That last,
and she can still post that on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. She didn't lose anything.
It's a double win.
Exactly.
You still have to get credit for it, right?
All right. So speaking of double wins, is there a business around this for you? Is this a vocation for you as well, or are you working on making it such?
Absolutely. So the book, it's very new. The book officially was published earlier this month. It is available on Amazon. It's available on my website. It's also available on Kindle. But it's a holistic mission for me, right? To help not only millennials be happier, but help their parents, the baby boomers as a whole, understand us better for everyone's benefit. So the other parts of that are, I love going into business networking clubs, into small, large, medium-sized businesses, talking with the millennials to help them understand, here's how to build happiness, talking with the stakeholders and managers saying, here's why your millennials are unhappy. Here's how to help them. Simon Sinek, again, big hero of mine, he talks about how when you live in a culture like America, where we eject our 18-year-olds into college and then into the workforce, they have no built-in support network. In other countries, you go to work and you go back home. If you get married, that's great. And then you move out and you move in with your fiancé. But in America, we live alone in our emerging adulthood, arguably the hardest part of our life. So the burden for growing and maintaining the young people's happiness falls on the employers. So what I want
to the young person.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yes and no. I think the mentorship, I'll put it that way, the guidance falls on the employers. And that's a burden they haven't really handled before.
Mm-hmm.
The boomers are more industrious, or more get up and go, kind of learn the hard way. Millennials don't really think that way. I think a part of that was, we're the most educated generation in America's history. 52% of us enter the workforce with a college degree. And that means we spend an extra 4 years over any previous generation, again, in that system where we have a tremendous level of support. And we also get a lot of feedback on every single thing that we do. And then as soon as we show up day one,
and then all of a sudden you're untethered.
Untethered.
Right.
Poof, it's all gone. So when we turn in our first big product report to our boss, and he goes, oh, thanks. We don't hear anything. We don't get a grade back. We have no idea what we did. And that's just one small example.
Right, and that causes unease, and then that could lead to depression.
Exactly. Exactly right. So my mission is to arm the employers and help them help their millennials be happy.
Now, can you share a little bit about the strategy of launching your book through Kickstarter?
Absolutely. So I looked at the traditional versus self-publishing industry, and I think what a lot of people don't realize is there is now a hybrid model. 10 years ago, it was, you have to partner with Penguin or Random House to have any hope of selling more than 1,000 copies. Or you go print it yourself with some guy in a back alley and no one's going to buy it because it doesn't look great. Well, there are now guys right in the middle. There's a company called BookLogix based out in Alpharetta.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect example of this. I had a really positive experience with them where they will print your book. They won't even look at it. They'll just print it for you if you want. But if you want to publish with them, if you want their official stamp of approval, you're going to go through their process. It's going to be more like a traditional publisher. But the author gets to keep all the royalties, all the control, and just print on demand per unit. So everyone wins.
So that's what you did?
That's exactly what I did. And of course, a part of that is you have to write them a big check. So I wanted to raise the right amount of money to do it right, which happened to be about $12,500. And I went to Kickstarter, the crowdfunding platform online. And
this is before you wrote the book?
Or this is actually after the book was already written.
So you finished the book. So you had it, the words down, but it wasn't in like official book form.
Correct.
It was like
it was not printed yet.
Right. It was in Microsoft or mm-hmm. right.
Well, yeah.
Word.
BookLogix were waiting for the big check. Right. Yeah. They graciously got me to a certain point. They said, all right, now it's time to pay the piper. Right.
Right.
So I wanted to raise $12,500. Very difficult for a book to do on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ground pounding. It's not, there are a lot of IT devices out there. The Fidget Cube is a great example that get picked up by TechCrunch.
Right.
And they just explode and they get 10 million
right.
hits on Kickstarter. Well, a book is more of a, it's definitely a personal marketing effort. Came down to working my existing connections, their connections to spread my mission and create a very robust, fleshed out page with lots of illustrations. People knew exactly what they were buying.
But the reward
into.
Was the book, though.
Exactly.
Like it was kind of pre-selling the book.
Exactly. So it was, my Kickstarter was a bit unique in that I promised my product weeks after people invested in it. So sometimes it could be years. For me, it was, if you donate by November 30th at midnight, I will have a book on your front door step by December 14th.
Wow.
Because you knew that if it got funded, you can just cut them a check and it was ready to go.
That's exactly right. So that it was definitely a lesson in project management as well to get that right, get 1,000 books printed. I ended up delivering about 400 books myself around Atlanta.
The last mile. That's a hard one.
Exactly, the last mile, yeah.
So it was a success?
Huge success. Yeah, I actually jumped up to the top of the nonfiction rankings in Kickstarter. Got a lot of public visibility that way. Raised about $14,000.
So, how did you do that? Just through your personal network, or did you get a boost? Like, was there any boost from a famous person or something that got it to the next level? Because, like you said, most of them don't succeed.
Yeah, I did not get any celebrity endorsement yet. Still working on it. I still send Elon Musk a bouquet. Well,
Simon Sinek. I mean, you mentioned right. five times. Really? He should be writing you a check.
Exactly. Yeah. So what it boiled down to was so many things at the same time. It wasn't really a simple formula for getting a ton of success, ton of visibility. It was lots of ground pounding. I'd go to a networking event, talk to 80 people, leave 80 business cards. 40 of them might check out the Kickstarter. Not even 20 of them. And then 5 of them might donate. So rinse, repeat, that sort of philosophy for a month and end up with $14,000. So lots of grit and gristle.
Well, that's a good strategy in life.
So that old formula still works. Yeah. That whole work hard thing.
Right. Do good work and work hard. Yeah.
So before we wrap, I want to, if we can, dive in for a moment. I want to learn a little bit more about writing the book, because this was your first book. You had not done that before, I expect. Did you... I don't know, take a webinar, read a book about writing a book, get some help on that front. What, speak to that process a little bit.
Yeah, the way it worked for me, and I think it's going to work differently for every author, I started with the basic core concept. I want to write a book that's going to train millennials how to be happy. Then as I studied happiness, the general ideas kind of fell into place. So I knew I wanted probably a chapter about mindfulness, probably one about meditation. Probably one about wealth, that's easy. And then one about romance. And eventually those fell into about 12 categories. And that became kind of my wireframe, almost like I was developing a mobile app. And then what I did after that is I filled in every chapter. I just dumped en masse every credible study I could find, every little note and interview data. And eventually I had 12 chapters and about 5,000 bullet points. And the next step was to go in and each chapter and just finesse all of those ingredients that were on the table into a nice meal for every chapter.
And then how did the BookLogix folks help you?
Yeah, so they did, they offer a lot of services for self-published authors, kind of piecemeal. So they would do, if you need copyright, they'll do your copyright. If you need a little ghostwriting support, they'll do that.
What about like cover art? Because you have a really good cover.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually outsourced that to the Rembrandt of cover designers. Her name is Erin Tyler. Erin, if you're listening. So Erin did the cover for I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell. Mm-hmm. And she's got millions of covers in circulation. So I knew I wanted to go.
And that was part of the funds. You used the funds for that?
I did. Yeah. So she's a premium price, but she's worth every penny because your book cover is your... That's how you're going to grab attention.
Because you can judge a book by its cover.
That's right. Exactly. Contrary to what they've been told.
Yeah. Here's a how to judge a book by its cover, right? If a cover is unexciting and not very engaging, the book is going to be unexciting and not very engaging because a good author is a good marketer and he knows how to put a lot of effort and care into not only his message, but in the very first thing that people see. And if it's kind of thrown together by someone on Fiverr, then you can expect that level of quality throughout the book.
There goes our Fiverr sponsorship.
But now we got a BookLogix one.
But now BookLogix is going to be our new studio level sponsor. This is not the first time we've heard great things about BookLogix. And I'm actually a client of BookLogix.
How are you?
Awesome. Well, yeah, those guys are doing a great job out there. So you're out there, you're teaching, you're consulting, you're speaking. You've written the book. Are you also, like, do you write articles or blog regularly, or do you feel compelled to just continue to commit ideas to paper? I know some people do.
Yeah, absolutely. I blog for Georgia Followers. It's a millennial-centric news site, kind of like Huffington Post for millennials in Atlanta. We recently passed about 1 million readers, so it's really taken off. So I write positive psychology for them. There's a newsletter called the Atlanta 100 which is my favorite outlet to write for because it comprises of specifically 100 word articles and 100 second stories. So it's really fun to read. It's fun to write for. I'll write a positive psychology article for them. It would be 99 words, and I'll go back, and it's a little bit like a puzzle. Where can I add a word?
That's great.
Yeah. So they're really addictive to write and read. That's the Atlanta 100. And yeah, and on my website, of course, I write blogs. Not, I wouldn't say on a weekly basis quite yet. I've got my fingers in a lot of different areas, but trying to get to that point, right?
And now you're a radio star. I mean, you got the whole gamut covered, I think.
The full package. So if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best way to learn more, I've got a very short video that introduces me and the concept of the book. It's on my website, Chris Busch, ChrisButsch.com. And you'll find a video there. You'll also find links to picking up the book on Amazon. The book is currently only 99 cents on Kindle. I'm trying to get it out to as many people as possible. And yeah, I think that's the best place to start is my website.
All right, it'll be on my Kindle before my head hits the pillow tonight, I guarantee you, especially at that price. That's fantastic.
That makes two of us.
Well, there you go. Just look at that. You made two sales today. Thank you so much for joining us, man.
Well, thank you so much for having me,
Stone. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. All right, until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon, our fearless producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time in the Fast Lane.